What is up, my peeps? This is Cisco with Inside the Dogfight Podcast. If you're someone like me that enjoys a lot of nonsense, but you love learning something new every day, then this show is for you. I will be interviewing badass individuals with all types of occupations, careers, hobbies, or even backstories. Everyday people like you and I, worth listening to. We will hear a bit about their journey, perspectives, but most importantly, their struggles and how they are surviving inside the dogfight. Love that. Let's go now into Uncle John. What's going on, man?
What it is, bro, Uncle Jay.
So, what is up with you, man? Give it a little backstory. Like, I know you've been all over the place trying to make it, all that stuff, you know? I know you grew up, you're like me, right? You were born in Canada.
Yes, I was, yeah.
And then, but grew up in LA. Mm-hmm. And then you left, right, to try and make it. And then, I know, I love how we're still hearing you.
I'm making a mess. Yes, sir.
And then now you're back. So, just to give context, at what age did you leave LA to try and make it and explore and find your niche?
I left at 19 years old.
And you came back and you were how old?
I came back and I was 26.
My man. So from 19 to 26, you're out of LA, multiple states, multiple countries, hustling, finding yourself, trying to make it. And I, dude, honestly, applaud you for that. Because you don't understand, not many people, just like Nahum, will leave the security of their family to go and try and find their thing. You know what I mean? And I've always, from the bottom of my heart, like, you've came back. And sometimes I talk with my dad and I'm like, you need to understand one thing, that John has one thing that there's so much value in it, and it's experience. You've experienced multiple states, multiple countries. Only God knows, and you know how many jobs you've had in between, what you've done to survive, you know? And that takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of belief also in oneself and a lot of faith, you know, and going out and trying to make it. And so explain a little bit about that journey. What made you want to leave LA?
Well, right off the bat, I could say it's LA itself that I guess you've been in a place, like in a city, that the hustle and bustle really resonates with you, right? And you really start to see like the culture behind it. Like, there's no way that you can take an L, right? The only way to get things done is when, the only time where you say it's over is when you say it's over.
You say it's over, yeah.
Okay. So when you're when you are brought up that way, right? There's really the only thing that you're set out, you're built to do is to find the truth in some things, or to find some things on your own, right? Like, so anything that in my case, I'm a very curious person.
Curious George, man of the family.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And what I can say is I'm the type of person that is going to question everything. And I'm the type of person that is going to test it, right? I don't know, earlier in the podcast you said, I'm the type of person to question, okay, I'm the type of person that that's gonna question, like, okay, why did you do this, or like, why was it worth it, right? Mm-hmm. So going back, like,
what made you want to leave LA?
Exactly. So going back, it was like, okay, on the personal, if for the people that are listening, right? Like,
and here's the thing, for the people that are listening, but also, bro, like, I consider both of you guys, like, my brothers too, you know? Like,
yeah.
Shout out to my brother, awesome, amazing brother. But I missed out a lot on just having siblings, right?
Right.
But as close as we were, I don't think I've ever asked you what made you leave LA. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's for the people that are listening, and also for even just me, like, I'm mm-hmm. really curious, what made you leave LA? Mm-hmm. You know, you were really young when you did it. So mm-hmm. I know you were in the middle of explaining it.
There's two things. There's two things. Mm-hmm. One is, I think, with me is, I'm a very adventurous person. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also in my DNA that I'm a very aggressive dude, and I'm going to tackle you until you give me the plain and honest truth. And I don't know where I get that from, but it has to do something with my background, right? Mm-hmm. With me, it was like, okay, I can already tell you the reason why I left was because I was told that a person that has to face the real world and become successful, that's a person that has made it. Mm. So when I was young, I was 19. I was at 17, I already knew that I wanted...
That you were going to leave.
At 17, I already knew that I had to leave the nest. Wow. Right? Mm-hmm. And I had to pursue something that was, even though I didn't know it at the time, that was honorable, right?
Right.
And to me, that's special to me because...
But most people want to leave the nest, but not most people don't want to go to another country, you know?
Yes.
So tell me about that, man.
Okay. But it's simple. It doesn't have to be another country, but it has to be a place where you have a path to... In this case, you have a path to progress yourself as an individual. Mm-hmm. All right. The weirdness about this is that I'm a person who, how can I say this? Well, you would know. You were born in a different country and you were mm-hmm. brought to America. Mm-hmm. But the only point of reference that you have is a place from a third world country. Your parents raise you mm-hmm. to your parents teach you to know that a first world country, whatever the rules they enforce, it's what's right. Mm-hmm. Right? So so you're growing up with that. So the only difference is that you're still not from a first world country. You're from somewhere else. You're from a different country. But the message is still the same. You work hard and you have to go after your dreams, right? So with me, I left the country because I knew that what was surrounding me wasn't going to benefit me in the long term. Mm. You know?
Which was what?
I can already tell you off the back of my head, bro, there were so many factors. One... What was my surroundings? So my surroundings were people who were non-creative, okay? And I already knew I had a propensity to be a creative person. Mm-hmm. Two was were people who were small-minded, mm-hmm. okay? But anybody could say, oh, yeah, the people around me are small-minded as well because they don't think like I do. No, small-minded, I would say, is people who...
Right, it could be a very dangerous concept.
Yeah.
Slippery slope, just say, oh, you're small-minded only because you don't agree with what I agree with.
Yeah. That's clearly like communication, like you, mm-hmm. you fail to share ideas with somebody.
Yeah.
But with me, it was clearly like, you know, I on a personal level, I could tell you, like, there's some people that when you talk to, you can really pick up, like, mindsets. You can really pick up, like, this person brings this type of baggage around themselves. And not, like, not baggage, but, like, mindsets more than anything.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And
well, there's baggage and perspectives. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it goes back, like you have to really start to not pay attention to those things, right?
Mm-hmm. It's not aligning to what you're trying to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not aligning to what I do, but you have to decide. You have to decide, like, this person, as much as I really like them, sure. or don't like them,
or respect,
you know, you know?
Yeah.
You have to continue doing your thing, right? Mm-hmm. You have to continue doing your thing, and you know, that is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, going back to, in my personal case, I was born in Canada, right? And as much as I grew up in the American system, right, I understood that the only way for me to progress and get a better education, you know, and I valued education as a way to expand my horizon, I knew that I had to leave the country and
the bubble.
Yeah, leave the bubble. And so I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And the fun part now was the fact that everything that I expected wasn't what it was, you know?
Ain't that the way life works, ladies and gentlemen?
Man, that was crazy because I had just recently moved to... I was dating my now wife,
yeah.
And he had moved there. We had become really close. Like you said, it was, we were like brothers because he doesn't have any other brothers. Right. I don't have any other brothers. Right. And right. We kind of gravitated towards yeah. each other. So yeah. when he left and I would drive by his house and I was like, man, he's gone. And then I was visiting my girlfriend at the time and we ended up driving to Montreal. Jonathan had been there for like seven months. And
mm-hmm.
when I drove up to the place where he was working at and I see him coming out with his work uniform. Oh my gosh, the feelings it gave me, man. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here, bro? Like, like seeing him in
which
that,
takes
like,
balls, John. Yeah, takes it, balls
like,
to do that.
It's one thing to say this place, they all speak French, but to be in a place surrounded, the feeling of being in a foreign place.
Please, yeah, explain that. You went back to Montreal, Canada, which is where we were born. But understand that Montreal is all French. Like yeah. it's one of the only provinces yeah, in that, Canada that's all French.
Yeah. That's what's crazy, right? So all my life, everybody, like my parents told me, okay, like, you know, just to let you know, you're Canadian, right? Like yeah. We brought you here when you were 2 years old. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm Canadian. But all my life, they're like, okay, just remember, though, you're from Montreal and you and your cousins. And the reason why you speak a little bit of French is because you're from Montreal. So at the time, bro, I didn't know.
And the Montreal, I guess a little bit of background, back in the 80s, you know, our families come from El Salvador, escaping the Civil War. Canada was offering really good relocation packages for war refugees. And so our grandparents, most of our uncles were there. Like me, Nahum, my family and us, we stayed in Los Angeles. But my uncles, they went to Montreal, and that's how these dudes were born there. And exactly. That's kind of giving a little bit of a background of how the whole Montreal connections, our grandparents are still there, our cousins are, a lot of our cousins half are still there. Half of our family, there. Yeah. Yeah, so that's, that. It was kind of like a return to roots, right? Because options were limited here. Yeah.
Exactly, bro. So,
specifically because, like me, and Hazer still, right? We don't, yes. we're not residents here. We weren't born here, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we're more limited, you know?
Exactly, bro. So with me, it's like, I remember, during the Obama presidency, there was a lot of things to that we had to be hopeful for. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But
hope, that was his,
yes, campaign slogan. Yes, it hope. Was. Yes. Yes, it was. And, I remember on my 17th year, I was graduating from high school. And I remember that my senior high school, I was talking to all my high school friends. And the biggest thing was like, what were we going to do once we were done with high school?
Of course. $1 million yeah. question, baby.
Yes. Yes, of course. And I have to credit Americanization, like American culture, for that, because it's like it gives you the mindset of like, okay,
what's next
yeah, and get ready. Mm-hmm. And be ready. Mm.
This reach is it, baby.
Yes, this reach is this is probably some things that my parents could have never taught me, you know. And but the reason why I left Cisco, it was the same issue in itself. Okay, what is next? Okay, so I had to outweigh my options, bro.
Yeah. Calculated risk.
Yes, my parents brought me here.
Yeah.
Okay, but they did it in order for them to survive. Mm-hmm. And for them to survive, they did what they had to do for our family to be safe.
Mm-hmm. A man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Exactly. At mm-hmm. 17 years old,
A man's got to do what a man's got to do.
At 17 years old, I'm like, okay, I want to do my things for my own. And if I didn't have those feelings, then I wouldn't have considered myself to be ready, you know, for the world.
Yeah.
But I got to say, my parents raised me to be ready for the world is about to throw at you. Mm-hmm. So, the reason why I left is because I was not bred, and I wasn't raised for complacency. Oof. You know.
Hold up. Cheers to that, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. All I knew is that I was young. And I needed to keep the machine going, moving forward.
Your life moves in one direction.
Yes, forward. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so at that age, at 17, 18 years old, I already knew that my parents had given all they could give, mm-hmm. you know. And I was ready to go at it.
Christopher Columbus style.
Yes, sir.
Let me go explore.
Yes, sir. And for a lot of people, they could say, oh, it's simple. You're gonna encounter that. But that's not for me. That's for you. If you know that, great. But for me, it was for me to find out, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and for me to prepare whoever was gonna come after me. Right.
To face whatever you had to face.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so what I encountered
was not at all what you expected.
No, it wasn't, bro. No, it wasn't, bro.
I know. Like, I'm telling you, like this is only a
preamble, bro.
Which look, so far, I don't know if you guys agree, gentlemen. I'm going to publish this. This is really good.
I was thinking the structure kind of presented itself. Uh-huh. And I was like, I feel like we could do a way better job if we kind of
sure
take things. But the reactions to us learning about a lot of our backgrounds that we didn't know before.
Yeah.
There's a genuineness to that that I feel like even with John, like seeing, you know, having seen him experience that a little bit, like I didn't have insight into that, what was going on.
Exactly. Like, so look, and just by the way, like there's going to have to be another episode with just like, you know, Nahum and follow up, like, bro, because I know there's so much to unpack.
We can get specific with stuff. Like, John's an athlete.
Heck,
I want to pick his brain
and
about
another one with like you, sports. You know, like one episode, because I'm noticing one episode for all three, like, it's not enough, you know what I mean? So we're going to have to do one on each one and really dig in into your dogfight, you know, but just a little background, you know. So you moved to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yes, bro, and I moved to Canada.
What
and,
does Drake call it? The six.
Okay,
that's just Toronto.
That's just Toronto.
So, how can I say this, bro? Like, okay, I can say it in the I'm gonna go about it the American perspective. So you think about, okay, I go to Canada and it's the six, the way Drake calls it, and what is the American perspective? It's Canada is very much like America. Okay, so that
how different can it get, right? North America, right?
It's another state.
Sure.
Thank you, bro. Thank you. So yeah, how different can it get, right? But what you fail to realize is that Canada is not America. It's moved through a different parliament or
frequency,
a different system.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Hispanic, as a Latin American, growing up in the West Coast, California, that does a lot of things to you, right?
There's a saying, Americans don't realize how different Canadians are from us, and Canadians don't realize how similar they are to us. Like, in their perspective, they feel like they're Europe to us. And to our perspective, they feel like another state. Like, and it's one of those things nobody ever tells you until you're there. And I never lived in Quebec. That adds another degree. Like,
Yeah, so to make things short, like, when I moved up there, the reason why I left after high school was for me to continue my education, right? So when I moved up there, what I thought I would encounter would be like hardship, as in like, okay, I have to suck up to this boss and I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he says is what goes.
Is the law.
Yeah. But
what you encounter
is what I encountered, bro.
Different dog, different battle. Yeah.
What I encountered, one right off the bat, was already a language barrier, right? Mm-hmm. I'm on the east coast of Canada, where half of my family, instead of speaking English and Spanish as Spanglish, they're speaking French and Spanish as, you know, Frenish. Yeah.
Frenish. Like, oh, that's what they call it?
Frenish. Frenish, okay. Bro. Okay. So,
and you show up with this LA lingo, huh?
Exactly.
What's up, my dog?
Yeah. It's not even LA lingo, it's American lingo. Like,
what's
bro.
A lefou? Lefou. Yeah. What's a lefou?
Lefou.
Yeah. So when I go up there, bro, it's like, okay, like literally, like I am the minority, right? Mm. I had to kind of assimilate, right?
Even though you're back at the country that you were born in.
Yeah, even though I was at the back of the country that I was born in. Yeah. Okay. So when I go back, I realize, okay, people are different, definitely in a different like wavelength, right? Mm-hmm. Like they vibe at a different thing. And so to me, what do I mean by like different wavelength? That meant like, to me, it's like not every, like, it's just a different culture, right? People have different points of preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for you to assimilate to a certain culture, that's when it was a breaking, like a like eye opening for me. Mm-hmm. In order for you to assimilate to a certain culture, you have to know what the common people are sure. about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Study so, the society, the way exactly. things work here. Yeah.
So that started opening my eyes. So if I'm a French Canadian, right? If I'm on the Canadian side and I'm from a French culture, what are these people up to? Like, what are these people into?
Mm. What's so, their frame of thinking, the yeah, perspective?
Frame of reference.
What do they right? like? What do they don't like?
Yeah. And to me, that opened up my eyes to really realize, okay, America has a preference to certain things.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And we value, right. Well, there's a lot of things that we value in mm-hmm. the American culture. Mm-hmm. But when you really experience how other cultures don't value certain values from the American culture, mm-hmm. you really start to get your eyes open. You really something doesn't bring you focus, you know, you're not going to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But unless somebody attracts your focus to the certain thing, you're going to concentrate on it. And so that to me was Canada. And the experience that it brought, like, you have people from so many different countries and their value structure was completely different from America's, you know? And it was so profound and it rattled the core of who you were that you had to question your own beliefs.
And when you think it's important, it rattles the core of what you think it's important, mm-hmm. right? Because I know LA, like, for example, we're such a car culture here, but then you go to the East Coast,
they don't give a fuck about cars.
Yeah, dude, we got right. public transportation, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a big thing. Like, that was definitely a big thing.
Here's all about what kind of car you drive. That's what makes you, you know, which is stupid.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You hit it right in. Like, everybody's like, oh, what you driving? Oh, that's a 6, that's an 8, mm-hmm. or that's, you know what I'm saying? And in that case, it's like, you're really, the dominant culture is like, okay, you know that we're past that. You know that we're all about preserving the environment. You know, so you come across a lot of things that you're just like, on your day to day, you really don't have to tackle it. Like, you really don't have to assert yourself mm-hmm. that this is your belief, right? Like, you believe, let's say in California, you believe like, okay, that having a good car, you know, is really beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then
it's the mark of your success. Or
exactly. Yeah. So one day to the other, all of a sudden, people are going to be aggressively questioning, why is having a good car something beneficial to you, towards you,
mm-hmm.
right? And you have to, if you don't assert yourself that, okay, me having a car is good for me, then people are going to challenge that. And you're going to, to me, it's like when you travel, you have to really be, if you don't assert yourself, then you're going to be immersed into what they think.
Well, one of the things I remember, you know, that you were struggling with, and like an example of this difference in perspective, is here it's everything's, America's known for being a melting pot of cultures, right? Like, we're very, we assimilate really quickly. Like, the Hispanic demographic quickly assimilates into American, and 2 generations in, it's like, you know, we're very whitewashed.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, it's more of a multicultural entity that tries to preserve the cultures. So because of that, all of the cultures hang out together. So the Muslims hang out with the Muslims, the people from India hang out with the people from India, the Asians stick to their own bubbles. And yeah, there's assimilation that goes on because of school, but it's not as pronounced as in the U.S. They still try to preserve those little circles and the Quebec, the French culture as well. So one of the things I remember you had issues with was you here in the U.S., you floated from, you know, the band, the high school marching band, the football players, the church. Like I said, we have so many different things, and you can hang out with all of them over there. Whenever he was hanging out with a certain group of people or listening to rock music, all the Mexicans were like, or the Hispanics were like, what are you doing, bro? Like, what are you, what, yeah, it was kind of hard to navigate that, right? Like, they want, like, once you were in, made a friendship, it was like, no, you're us. Like, what are you doing with them? Like, I remember you having that struggle.
Yeah, it would do. Yes. Like, the thing about America is that we know how to, we understand that what we care about, we can value, you know? And when I left America, it's like, you can value what you value. And at the end of the day, people are going to appreciate who you are, who you are. Like, it doesn't matter what you're into, right? Like, and in Canada, it was like a little bit more stratified. Like, it was a little bit more segregated in this sense. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that it all has to do with the fact that it's different countries. And the population of Canada, in this case, it's like...
Yeah, I think like there's more people in California than Canada.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like 32 million Canadians, right? So 32 million Canadians, and you can really like, okay, these people like this stuff. There's these type of people in Canada. But in America, especially in California, you have so many people that, you know, you can be... You can assimilate in so many ways in California that you can't in California, in Canada, mm-hmm. right? So that was my mindset. My mindset is to really get along with so many people because we all have similar values. We all have similar things that we can get along with. In Canada, when I was out there, it was like, yo, it was something that it was a sight to see. Like I was a sight to see, like that I can get along with so many different type of people. Right. And not sacrifice who I was.
Do you think you were good at doing that because you came from LA? Because here in LA, there's like he said, we're a melting pot. We're like United Nations. Right.
Yes. So I definitely think that. And also I definitely think that because of how I was brought up. And because of my background as being a Latin American. Mm. Because as a Latin American, you have no biases, right? Like everybody knows what a Latin American is. Like they're not from Europe.
We're definitely not from Europe.
And we're definitely like as a ethno like a as like a like a ethno, what's the word?
Diaspora.
Diaspora. Like we're not from Europe and we're not from Africa, right? So what the hell are we?
What did you
say? We're kind of from Europe. Diaspora.
What is that?
It's how do you describe that? It's like the
diaspora is something where you plant it and it spreads out, right? Like
the Latinidad, the whole like we're.
I didn't know that one.
But it is very, very European. Like,
well, we're influenced by Europeans, but I don't
like the African diaspora is wherever African Americans have have spread. So African Americans, Cuban Africans.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
What was I going with that, bro?
the being Latino, being Hispanic. Yeah.
Well, because you said how you were so good at getting, you know, cool with people out there. I asked you, do you think that's something that you picked up because you were born in, I mean, you weren't born, definitely, but you're from in LA.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. So, So I would always bring it back to the collective consciousness as a Latino Americano, Latin American, a Latin American who is he, right? Like, to me, it's a person who is very in touch with his Hispanic roots, mm-hmm. but as well, like, he understands the American culture.
Right.
Right. Okay. So where does the American, what does the American culture mean to a Latin American? It means that you assimilate and you know that it brings you a positive future. Okay. As a Latin American, you understand that there's a lot of good things that your culture brings. And you can still bring them with the new world. Right? So going back, like, I feel that being a Latin American in America, you really get to, it really becomes a blank slate. You can really absorb culture, and you're a lot more open to different cultures and understanding them than if you're somebody who was brought from somewhere else.
For sure, yeah.
And you were brought up so rigid that you can't really have an open mind to other things.
Sure. It's easier for us, especially growing up in LA, to have an open mind.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But that may not be the case if we were born in, like, Central America, South America, or, like, even in some of the rest states. You know, we don't have to go that far.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, so you went to Canada. How many years were you in Canada before then you went to El Salvador?
I was there 5 years and a half.
5 years and a half in Canada?
Yeah.
So why did you go to El Salvador then?
I went to El Salvador because, obviously, okay. I grew up here and in America, and my father took me to play soccer at, you know, AYSO first.
Our families grew up around soccer, yeah. too, Salvadorians.
And, you know, I was...
You played sports in Canada, age. Too, though. You were playing basketball, yeah. and yeah. so you were athletic.
Yeah. Just so, to for background.
At a high level.
Yeah. Jonathan has always been, like, the athletic cousin from the family.
Yeah, so with me, it was like... to me, it was like soccer was never a thing I had to work at. It just came natural mm-hmm. because I was born in it, right? Mm-hmm. And as, you know, obviously, like, as I grew older, there were people that valued different sports, but I was always an athletic person. So mm-hmm. as long as I was in motion,
you're good.
I was happy.
Yeah.
And so in high school, instead of playing soccer, I played basketball, mm-hmm. you know, and I did pretty well at it. I played high school basketball, and obviously we're in LA, right? So basketball is a huge culture. I became in love with it, and I knew that I was pretty good at it. So when I left California, I knew that when I went to college, I could play college ball. And so I did. Mm-hmm. I was a walk-on for college for a team, and I made the team in college for basketball.
In Canada?
Yeah, yes, I did. And
basketball school, like Dawson, right?
Yeah. And so I did that, bro, and I guess along the way, I had to start realizing, like, the type of talent that I had, mm-hmm. you know.
You could compete at a high level, and you realized that. You knew that you could compete
exactly
professionally
exactly.
in other
exactly. And so, I did that. And so when I left Canada, it was already probably like almost 2 years in where I was playing at competitive clubs. I was playing with a lot of people that were from different countries, but they were also Canadian born, mm-hmm. or they also had their descent. Canadian citizenships.
Yeah.
And I was competing with them, and that's all I did after my college, like my college was done, because mm-hmm. I was done playing basketball, and so I went back into soccer, and I was doing really well. And at the end of the day, I always felt like, okay, if I can do something for my family, or like if I can do something for myself, and I can do something from where I come from, mm-hmm. I will gladly show it, mm-hmm. you know, publicly. And so the time came where I was like, okay, the opportunity presented itself. And I'm like, okay, you want to try to take your talent and you want to try it on the professional level?
Back home.
Yes, sir.
Salvador.
And so I'm like, I'm at the point. I was, what, 23? I was 24 at the time. And I'm like, better place to do it than right now.
Really bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to give thanks to my parents for the race of for the way they raised me because I'm not a person that really, like, if I don't believe in myself, mm-hmm. I won't go ahead and call your bluff, mm-hmm. right? Because I believe in myself. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what I did. And when I got the opportunity to go and try myself at the professional level.
Of what? Professional level of what?
Soccer.
In Salvador?
Yeah.
Okay.
El Salvador, Central America.
How professional?
Pretty...
Division one, right?
Yeah, Division one.
Division one.
Professional, bro. And it's like, I would say MLS level, mm-hmm. right? Like a lot of people recruit from the MLS.
They were the champions at the time, and like that same because they were the champions, they played in the CONCACAF Champions League. So they faced off against the LA Galaxy. Mm. And when they played in El Salvador, they beat them like 5-2 or something mm-hmm. like that. So it's legit. Like,
definitely in the game.
Okay.
Right? And at the end of the day, I knew. I was like, I'm going to go for it. I already knew mm-hmm. that as a single person, I had an advantage. Mm-hmm. Right? I can say yes or no whenever the fuck I wanted to. Right?
Say it like the Haas twins.
Yeah. Whenever the...
Whenever the...
Fuck I wanted to.
Reverb.
Yeah, bro. So I'm like, okay, winner, like whatever comes out of this,
yeah.
Whatever comes out of this, I know.
It's going to come out of it.
People are going to benefit from it.
Yeah.
And I did, bro. I went there. The trial were 3 weeks. And I ended up staying there 3 months, you know? Yeah, bro.
Yes, good job. Good shit, bro.
So at this point...
Tell me what the flight was like as you were leaving Montreal, Canada, flying into... Where in Salvador?
Yo, I could honestly tell you I was so brainwashed. I was so brainwashed.
Where'd you go in Salvador, though?
And I was... Wait...
Where? What part in El Salvador?
When I landed, it was in Central.
San Salvador?
Yeah, San Salvador.
La capital, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Capital.
But I could already tell you, bro.
But you stayed where?
I stayed in Metapan.
Metapan.
Metapan. Yeah. Yeah, Shout out to Metapan.
Shout out to Metapan, bro.
Roots.
Roots. That's our roots,
sir.
Right there.
Yes, sir.
Metapan.
Bro.
Put the bread in.
Metapan.
I can already tell you, bro, that...
What was that flight like, man? What were you thinking?
Nigga, I slept, bro. Bro, I slept. Look. It's
what did we say earlier about John? Like, he said, BLM.
Ninja.
Bro. Okay.
Just for context, y'all need to understand, like, we grew up around, like, our black friends and all that, and we have that ticket, so yeah. Apologize in advance if...
when we were growing up, we had a black card.
Yeah. it's such a part of us, so, yeah, continue.
Yeah, bro, so what I'm trying to say is by the time I got to El Salvador, I knew one thing that... in order for you to make it at a high level, mm-hmm. yes, you had to have talent. Mm-hmm. Yes, you had to have skill. Mm-hmm. But God damn it, you had to have confidence, bro. Mm. And Yeah, you had to have, you have to have belief. You have to have belief in yourself.
Almost an unhealthy level of belief in yourself.
Yes, sir, you do. Because
like the Trump level of belief. The biggest crowd you've ever seen.
Best president.
Love it, love it, love
yeah, bro.
I love his confidence. I'll tell you that.
Three because terms.
Because I can already tell you, bro. I can already tell you. Like, if you didn't have that, then mm-hmm. you had no business.
Oh, and they're going to smell it on you.
Yes, sir.
The fact that he don't believe in himself that
yes,
much.
Sir.
They will exploit anything. Yes, they will shred you.
Yeah. Yes, sir, bro. Like, welcome. Like, welcome, bro. Like,
it's like a dog. They smell the fear. Exactly. You know?
Prior to me moving, going to El Salvador, and actually trying out for the pro team, right? Mind you, they had one dude from the Jamaican national team.
What?
Just to mention, that fool was fast as fuck, bro. That nigga was so quick.
Shout
bro.
Out to our brothers,
our man. Brothers in Jamaica.
Dude, that fool was so quick. There was three
Jamaica,
guys.
Jamaica,
yeah, there Jamaica was three Queens guys.
Too.
Dude, yeah. There was three guys so quick, bro. I thought it was quick, but there were three guys so quick. One was from the Jamaican national team. You can actually like see him out in the I think he's playing for the MLS now.
No way. What's yeah. his name? Do you yeah. remember?
Last name Romero.
Okay.
I'll have to get the name back to you. You
okay.
know?
Yeah, for sure.
The other dude was from the Costa Rican national team.
They had just played in the World Cup that year. Like, so he was in the World Cup.
Definitely, bro.
They had played in the World Cup.
They got eliminated by if they hadn't been eliminated by the Netherlands, they would have gone to the semi against Argentina. So that's.
And you're playing with these guys.
Yeah, I'm playing with these guys, bro. Yeah, dude. I'm playing with these guys. So going back, right? Like.
This is gold.
Yeah, confidence wise, right? So I can honestly tell you that. When I told my uncle, hey, I'm more than ready to go and compete with these guys.
You weren't more than ready to compete with these guys.
Well, now I know that. Now I know that.
No, of course.
But when we're talking about ingredients, what do you need? You need talent.
Skill.
You need skills and you need confidence. With me, I definitely had the confidence, but it wasn't. By the time I told them yes, like, hey, I'm ready to go compete with these guys, it had been a good year that I was consistent, competing with guys. I was still in Canada, but these guys had played for their national teams mm-hmm. in Europe. Mm-hmm. Canada is a very multicultural country, so a lot of the guys will come to Canada for the educational purposes mm-hmm. to get mm-hmm. their degrees. Mm-hmm. But their loyalties still lie with their
country, motherlands.
Yeah,
Mother Russia.
Yeah, culture. Exactly. Yeah. So I was all up in that mix, and so obviously I was ready. I was ready to test it, bro. I was ready to test it, and I did get tested. And and to be honest, dude, that was great, man. That was great as an athlete. That was great as an athlete.
Give me the perspective. You arrive, right? I know things must have been so different. I remember you telling me a story and tell it to, you know, to anybody that's listening. What was the first practice like when you noticed their level of talent?
Well, okay. One thing I know about myself, I don't know if everybody who's an athlete has that. Mm-hmm. Is I'm able to smell real quick the pace of the game. You know, I think you need that, bro. Mm-hmm. I think you need to know
the level of awareness.
Yes.
Yeah.
The pace of the game.
Right.
And what do I mean by the pace of the game? The pace of the game is where people's mind where the other other player's mindset is at, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You understand, okay, this person wants to do it because he wants to score goals. He's this way because he wants to score goals on the personal. Or this person really wants to win these people. Mm-hmm. Like, you really have to read.
You're able to sniff out
the motivations. Yeah. The motivations behind every person.
Yeah.
Right. And I was able to pick that off. You know, I was able to pick that off. There's a lot of things I didn't know about the culture behind the soccer program, mm-hmm. right? But I was able to start picking things up little by little. And right off the bat, I can sniff out, okay, who are the people who have a future and who are the people who are trying to take their spots, right?
Mm.
So when I was there, all I focused on was like getting in tune with the guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't focus on. I knew I wasn't the best person on the crowd.
Right away, you sniffed that out.
Yeah. I knew I wasn't. But what I did know was that I was confident in what I brought. Like I knew what I was solid in. Mm-hmm. You know.
You knew what you were good at.
Exactly.
And we need to work on.
Exactly. So it comes back to what I was telling you earlier. You got to have the confidence of what you bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And sure enough, bro, the things were, the trials were like 3 weeks, you know, and I stayed there for 3 months.
Ooh, shout out.
Yeah. I stayed there for three Respect. Months. Yeah. By the first week, it was crazy. The first week, it was just,
shock.
A shock. Yeah. Definitely a shock because, every time that I got the ball, on the normal competitive level that I played, it was easy. I have the ball, and I'm just going to secure it.
Keep and the ball.
Yeah. You can keep the ball, and you can easy. Secure it, and there figure was no way to yeah. figure out what you were going to do next. And on this level, it wasn't even a question. Like, even though in your head you thought, okay, I have the ball, and I'm going to figure out what I do next. And I have every belief in myself that nobody's taking the ball away from me when they pass it to me. That was shattered the first week. So it was like, the first week was just like, dude, what the fuck are you still thinking that this is like, this is, you're in control. You're not in control.
Wow.
The only thing that's in control. Yeah. The only thing that's in control is the vision. And the vision is to win. What I can tell you from.
So playing in Canada, your mindset wasn't even, can I even guard the ball? Your mindset, as soon as you got the ball, you were like, okay, what am I going to do with it? But at this division, you got the ball and. People, it was taken away from you.
So people already knew that their mindset was like, I'm taking the ball away from him and I'm passing it to this person so he can pass it to that person.
And they were able to take sense? The ball away from you? Like,
it just happened.
In a way where you're like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, so I had to wrestle with the idea that my ego had to wrestle with the idea.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
My ego had to wrestle with the idea.
That must have been painful.
Bro, it was like, it was
dissonance.
Painful. When you grow up all your life and you can walk into any team, any soccer team and be like, oh, yeah, we need him. Like, we want him in our team.
Jonathan, right? We want you. Yeah.
Not only that, and then go to another sport and be like in basketball, like let's say basketball, like, oh dude, we can definitely
and
use
own
him.
It. And
yeah,
own
and
it.
Own him. Like yeah. we need this guy as our like our sixth man. Right. Just like that.
Oof, man.
Then I go to Canada, no problem. I'm just hustling. You
owning
know.
It.
Yeah. Then I go on the professional level, bro.
Bro. And oh my God.
Yeah, and I'm there. And when I start to realize that these guys are not only like it's not like, okay, oh, this guy has the ball. Let me try to take it away from him. And if I take it away from him, cool. No. The style of play is like, when I take it away from him, he's going to pass it to this guy so he can pass it to him.
They had the whole, before they even, like, taking it away from you was a given. They already had the three moves ahead.
Yes.
Like, wow.
They were already positioning themselves based on what the third guy was going to do.
Bro. Wow.
And I can tell you, now that I play at a city league, right? It's just different, bro. It's just different. Like, I came back here, and now I'm like, dude, like I have clarity of how the game is supposed to be. But that's because I was playing at this professional level.
Which I gotta reinstate or elaborate or, you know, make a statement of. Not many people even get that opportunity.
They don't, bro.
You know what I mean?
And so I do not have to
even
say,
like, what does it even take to, you know, get the opportunity to fly across the country and play with these guys? Like, that is such an experience, you know?
Because I had some insight in, I feel like when John writes his book, I'm going to be the ghostwriter because I remember so many details. But going back to the initial tryout, I knew because, you know, we have, my dad knows people in the team. We knew other people who were also doing the initial tryout when he was trying on. And I think there was like 15 other, you know, kids who had played their whole lives. And they didn't even make it past the conditioning.
Wow.
The conditioning, the physical fitness. And they had like two or three kids. Hey, you guys are ready for this. You guys need to go. Come back another day, you know, work on your fitness. He made that filter. He went through that filter.
Yeah. I was top five, like, out of like 30 some.
Tell him about your nickname. Tell him about your nickname. Tell him about your nickname.
Thank you, bro. What's your nickname?
So, okay, I'll get there.
Okay, I'll get there.
Yeah, bro. Okay. So, just to finish off the experience, it was that what you guys were saying, like this, it wasn't like, okay, if I get his ball, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It was a matter of fact, I'm going to steal this guy, the homie's ball, and I'm going to pass it to him so he can pass it to him. So, mind you, that's the game that's going on at the professional level. It's like, To end it for y'all, it's like everybody knew their physical limitation, right? Even though they were elite athletes, everybody knew their physical maxes.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew what they were capable of and what they were not capable of.
And what to exploit.
Exactly, bro. Their physical limitations, mm-hmm. you know? And a lot of people, a lot of like normal people, they can't really calculate that, mm-hmm. because they don't know their physical limitations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like NFL players, they're really good at that. So that's what I experienced. Like NFL players, like, oh, I can run a 4.440, mm-hmm. so I can get that ball. I can get that ball, and I can dish it out, you know, I could dish it out to these people. So that's what I experienced. These people were so, they were so intelligent about what their physical limitations was and if they had any, because they were so athletic, that's what I experienced, you know. And to go back, bro, like my nickname, bro. Okay. When I got there,
I don't know this, by the way.
Dude,
Salvadorians are savages with nicknames. Yeah, like, don't let your guard down. Like you bring a stupid sandwich to work. That's gonna be your nickname. Like, dude, egg sandwich. Look at this egg. Yeah. That's your nickname. Like,
so I go there, right, and throughout the whole experience, I try to be as native as I can. mm-hmm. right? My parents raised me to be a Salvadorian, you know, a person from Central America. And I would say, hey, I'm very much Central American. But it's not until you're raised Central American that you go to a place where you've been brought up in Central America that you notice the difference.
I'm not Central American. That's where you notice. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That's the feeling.
We consider ourselves here
Central American. Central American. Yeah, but they'll smell you out.
Till you go over.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. my whole concern was, okay, the better, the less they know, the better. You know, mm-hmm. Because I don't want to bring certain type of energy or certain type of attention.
Yeah.
But what Nahum was saying is, through all these trials on the professional team, you know, at the second week, they wanted to do a fitness trial. You know, this is where I did really well. You know, because you know, I am an athlete and I had been training for a while. I placed top 5 in like out of 30 something, you know. But it wasn't easy, bro. And it was one of those things where I was like, you know, it brought out my inner demons, like, to really pull through.
Yeah.
And that's when, on a cultural level, I had to give myself away. Like,
you were pretty silent up to this point. You're not talking too much.
Yeah, I'm not.
They don't know where you're from.
Minding your own.
Yeah, minding my own.
They don't know anything about person. You.
Exactly. Just low profile. And the guys, they know, they see me and they're like, this guy is strange. But he does look Hispanic. But okay, benefit of the doubt.
But we got questions about
Benefit of the
you
doubt.
You could pass as anything.
Yeah. Okay. Benefit of the doubt, this guy's probably Mexican. Mm-hmm. You know? Because I did get questioned. Like,
shout out to my Mexican brothers.
Yes, sir. They're like, oh, what part of Mexico? You're from the north? I'm like,
And when they mean north, it means like
Mexico. Yeah, not America, Mexico. And but when these trials came, I placed really good. I placed mm-hmm. 5, like within the top 5 of 30 something. But they were so hard that I remember one of the trials, I really just like I just had to cuss out the end of the drill. You know, I was like, God damn it, what the fuck? Like this, right?
Like the LA homie came out. The LA?
Yeah.
Love it.
Bro, why'd I say that, bro? Why'd I say that? If I didn't know my peoples. But bro, the moment I said that, it's like
people's antennas were like,
straight up.
They learned everything they needed to know.
The people from Honduras, the people from El Salvador, Guatemala, everybody, they just picked it up. Nah, this nigga ain't Mexican. This fool is from the United States of America. Yeah.
United States of Michael Jackson, baby. Yeah,
Straight up, bro.
Oh, man. What was your nickname then?
Oh, bro. Dude. I think what saved me is the fact that that's another story, but they're like, because at the end of the trials, I'm like, God damn it. I had a cuss in English, right?
What'd you say?
I was like, God damn it, this shit is crazy. What the fuck?
And then after that, people were like, what the? They're like,
bro, everybody was just looking at me and they're like, yo, this homie did good, but he's not from here. He's not entirely one of us, right? Yeah. Next morning, I'm walking up to practice, and everybody's like, "Hey, cabrón!" They're like, "Hey, look, it's what the fuck, homie." Hey, that's the what the fuck, bro. Yo, that was my nickname, bro. For the next 2 months, bro. Yo, hey, what the fuck? It wasn't even John, bro. I had told him my name was Jonathan, bro. Jonathan. They're like, hey, what the fuck? Come over here, bro.
Vení pa acá.
Straight up, bro.
Damn.
Yeah, so that's the environment I was in, bro.
Yeah.
That's the environment I was in.
Savage. Share real quick, like, to wrap it up, you know, like, two things. One, you got to tell the story. I remember you told me once how different this place was. we're coming from a culture where we drink our protein shakes. Mm-hmm. I put my little powder, mm-hmm. my little nice Target powder in my, not even real milk, like in my almond unsweetened milk in a nice shaker cup, and I shake it and I take my protein and I go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And I remember you telling me a story about like you needed to take some protein and then something about some like yolk or something like that they drink. Share that. Do you remember that?
I'm trying to remember, bro. Keep going.
You said something about like it was so different. Like some of these cats, like some of these guys, like because of a Sawaldon 2, they're so limited.
Yes.
The way they would drink their protein.
Okay, yes.
Okay, share.
All right, bro. So being out there, bro. I'm close to 5'10", mm-hmm. 5'10", and I'm close to 5'10". I'm about 175 pounds, healthy, stock, right? Athletic. And
philosopher.
Yeah. When I was out there, bro, like I got in there 165 pounds. It was normal for me to assume like I was going to lose some weight because of the crazy training.
Right.
But when I started getting to 158, I'm like, yo. Like, I'm in this country, and I'm like, I ain't getting enough food.
I'm dying.
Food.
Like, yeah, I'm literally dying.
And I'm trying to get, like, some cereal and stuff, but you can't find it some days during
There's
the year.
There's no cereal out there?
Yeah. There is, but sometimes there isn't in the shop.
What do you mean sometimes there isn't? Oh, like, it won't be restocked?
Yeah, exactly, bro.
And I'm sure it's not, like, the crazy options that we got
exactly,
here.
Exactly, bro. Yeah. So, like, at this point, I'm like, I'll call my aunt where I'm staying at, right? Like she had a big house and she's like, you know, I could stay there. And I'm like, oh man, Dia, like I'm having this problem. Like every day I'm having this sensation that I'm always hungry. You know, I know I'm playing a lot. I know I'm training a lot and I'm eating, but why the fuck am I so hungry, bro? Wait up. I can't get satisfied.
I can't see
yeah. and it dawned on me, like a lot of these dudes that are like my size, bro, the reason why they're 30 pounds lighter than me is that they can't get the nutrition.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But to
even
me,
at that professional level.
Even at the professional level, bro, I'm like, okay, nah, I can't compete with these guys if I need to eat. So I explained that to my aunt. My aunt. And I'm like, look, I'm starving. Like, I need to get protein in me. Like, not just one chicken breast a day. Like, I mm-hmm. need more protein.
It's not even enough for me exactly, here. Exactly.
Like, I need to get it. And she's like, okay, no problem, you know. So, next, like, a morning, she wakes me up. And she's like, oh, okay, let's go to your uncle's cousin, brother-in-law's farm. And so we go. Yo, and we get there, bro. And I'm like, oh, great. She's like, we're going to get your milk for the rest of the week. And I'm like, okay, no, cool.
Because you couldn't just buy a gallon of milk?
Because it's not the same, bro. It's like the milk is like... Actually, I don't even think they sell gallons. They sell liters, mm-hmm. liters of milk, mm-hmm. right? But it's not the same thing. But then she explained to me, they're like, look, there's a lot of guys that they're very into like athletics. They want to go to their gym goers, mm-hmm. right? The gym goers and the
meatheads.
Yeah, meatheads, let's say. But the way they get their protein.
They bulk up.
Yeah. The way they want to bulk up is this is what they do. What they do is like they get whatever is left from a freshly birthed cow.
Newborn cow.
A newborn cow.
Calf. Yeah.
She has to feed on a lot of the antibodies. So a lot
the
of
placenta?
The placenta, all that stuff. I don't know if they eat the placenta, but I know a lot of these fitness freaks. Because they don't have the protein readily available from our countries, mm-hmm. they'll go to these cows that have just had freshly born.
Given birth?
Yeah, freshly given birth. and they'll feed off the colostrum and the milk and the antibodies that they give to the newborns. That's how they bulk up. That's how they get their nutrition from, bro.
That's their creatine.
Yeah. Exactly. That's their creatine. So that's where I was, bro. And clearly, like, it's nothing for them, but for me it was an eye opener.
Now, fast forwarding and to wrap it up, we're back now in the States. Uncle John's trying to pee. We're like, dude, I'm trying to wrap it up with you. God damn it. One minute. All right, he's got to go.
We're gonna plan out the drinks next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, that makes you appreciate American options. Like, I'm like, seriously, just go to GNC. Like,
yeah, like me. Like, I got the creatine, the protein powder, yeah. Different kinds of protein powder, different types of milk, and we forget. It's just like the bubble. You know, we think that everybody has this amount of options.
Yeah,
everybody is exactly. Has our views, our perspectives.
Because we don't have to think about it. It's just default. Mm. And then you hear about this and it's like going to cows.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. Like, no, I don't think we realize like the privilege of we're hungry, like me yesterday. Didn't almost like eat all day. I got home and I was hungry and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go get some pho.
Yeah.
You know, and a couple years back, that wasn't even like, I'm hungry. I have to go grab a bow and arrow and hunt.
I know.
You know? So, but yeah, so fast forwarding, Uncle John's back. Fast forwarding now, we're to wrap it up. We're here in LA. You're back in LA. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Number one. Is what made you come back? Mm-hmm. And then two, what's your dogfight now?
Okay. For me, it was simple because the reason why it was simple is because I came full circle. To me, it's all about understanding who you are, mm-hmm. right? As a person, as a male, as a man, I could tell you that, you know, there's certain things that you're instilled with. Like, there's certain things a man does and a man takes responsibility for. You know, I was raised to be a person that that understands... understand that you have a role and you're responsible for the people that you love, mm-hmm. for the people that you're accountable for, in this case, family.
Yeah.
Right. Not everybody is born the way I am, but thankfully I come from a big family, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm accountable to these people. I figured that out on my own. Mm-hmm. Right. And I have a role for these people. I can be something positive in their life, mm-hmm. you know. And at the end of the day, you start realizing that when you face the real world, like when you face the vast world, mm-hmm. you know, who are you to the world and who are you to the people that love you? Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Which may be two versions of yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you have to decide. You have to really come to grips. You have to atone. You have to come to a atonement that you're going to be this person for these people, you know, and that brings you happiness, you know, and you also have to understand, like, what didn't happen for you didn't happen. Like, if you had some dreams and aspirations, you know, and they didn't happen, you know, you have to come to grips with that,
mm-hmm.
you know. So for me, what made me come back or what made me come here now is I really understood who I was. In the sense, like, I really understood that I am more than just my, what I want to accomplish, like what I tried to accomplish and failed at didn't make me who I was. Mm-hmm. There's more to life than that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
You know, and it's not a, it's not a way to compensate for what I've lost, but more like
we've gained
finding who you are, like finding more about yourself,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know? And on the personal, I found out, man, dude, like you really start to value certain things that you didn't know you had.
Mm-hmm.
So that can mean a lot for different people. It can be different for you.
Mm-hmm.
It can be different for me, but I guess it's on the subjective level. Like, you know, these things make me happy and I love that I still have them, you know, and I'm going to do everything to keep them. You know what I'm saying?
No, shout out to you. Like, not only leaving the nest, but you left the freaking, most people just leave the nest. You both have left
the planet,
the Amazon, you know what I mean? Like the plane, the terrains, yeah. you know? And so I've left the nest, but still within the same vicinity, you know, just different tree, you know? But
experimenting now, in your own way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now that you're back, what is your biggest fight, your biggest dogfight right now?
My biggest dogfight.
Which in a way, both of you guys are back, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty dope. My biggest dog fight is just to really magnify everything that I hold dear. Like, how would I say it? It's to magnify everything that I hold positive in my life. You know, there's no reason why I can't share things that bring value to my life to other people that don't know that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What do I mean by that? Like, you go through the world and you really realize, like, dude, there's people that you go across and they've never really felt
mm-hmm.
love in a certain way, mm-hmm. or they've never really felt appreciation in a certain way. And so my dogfight, I guess, at this point is like, yes, I want to recreate what I hold dear in my life. But at the same time, I want to, let other people know that this exists, right? It's a form of knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of knowledge is power. I don't know what it might mean to people around you.
No, but let them like discern what it means to them.
I ghostwrite that part of John's book, I'm gonna reword it as, you want to find the best things you've experienced in all the places you've been. And you also have identified the things that make you who you are, that you love, and you want to anchor yourself in those, and you want to scale them. Like that's my takeaway. Like,
there's a lot of layers in that.
Yeah, there's a lot, dude. I love the question, "What is your dogfight?" And I wish I would have prepared it beforehand. But mm-hmm. like, ever since you asked it, I'm like, there's so many. Like, I feel like the question makes you identify where you're headed,
mm-hmm.
in the multiple directions we're heading, the
That's
different
true.
Dimensions,
mm-hmm.
and what the, like, it's a very powerful question. And like, I feel like there's so many dogs in my fight.
And, oh, for sure. That's why. Yeah. I was specific. What's your biggest dog fight? Because there's like, I can identify like 50. You know, right now, like you're going on. Mm-hmm. You know, just in this little time. But so to wrap it up, okay, Nahum, going back to you. What's one advice you would give to anybody that's listening? Given your journey, what you've learned, your career, music, and what you do now, what is it?
Digital marketing.
Digital marketing. So what's one advice you would give to anybody that may identify with you?
That's a tough one, and I'll probably think of a better answer in the shower tomorrow, but like, this is one of those things where like, oh, I should have said this, but advice.
What's your applying conditioner?
Yeah. That's a really tough question, because I'm not
usually. Or any advice or any. I'm sure, you know, you can craft it up better on another episode, which there has to be more.
Yeah.
You know, sure. But any piece of advice.
To anybody who maybe identifies with the stuff that I'm kind of going
exactly.
for. Position yourself. Do whatever will create the most action. So there's different things. There's times where we're weighing options, like what am I going to do today? What should I do? You can't really, your intuition kind of fails you when trying to weigh options. Do whatever is going to get you the most activity. Do whatever is going to get you closer. Position yourself in a way that's going to get you the most. For example, sometimes for me, that activity is a workout. Like I feel stuck. I don't know what to work on that day. Dude, just hit the gym. Mm-hmm. That's action. That's mm-hmm. literally action. Mm-hmm. And everything else flows from there. So mm-hmm. somebody who doesn't know what to do, I'm kind of thinking of a podcast. Okay, whatever you can get done now, whatever will get the most action done now, do that. Mm. When you're stuck. Mm. Obviously, don't sacrifice your responsibilities.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people need to be told, you need to wait. Most people need to,
do it. Something.
Do
right.
something.
Right,
yeah.
right.
The plan.
Get will, off your ass.
Think of a plan, and then the real plan will reveal itself once you're moving. That's my biggest takeaway. Like, whatever plan you have is going to fail, but once you're executing that plan, the real plan will reveal itself. So just love action, that. Man. Action.
Same thing. I got to say, like, it's exactly what happened with this podcast. It was an idea. It was in my head and everything. And, but then I'm like, you know what? I started buying things, you know, bit by bit. But then there was one biggest piece, which was this, the Rodecaster Pro. And I'm like, nah, this is it. I have to go. I have to jump into it. And as I jumped into it, then it led me into, okay, I got to make the logo as I did that. Okay, I got to create the intro as I did that. Okay, I got to create the outro and as I did that. So it was just like a domino effect. But it all started with an action.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
you need some type of, like you said, you did due diligence. You did research. So there does need to be an outline. There does need to be a game plan. And then once you're executing that, the real game plan, you know, once you get punched in the face, that's when the real, like once you're in a fight, once you're in a dog fight and you get punched, you're pretty much doing prepping for the next fight at that point. Mm-hmm. Like use that as an opportunity to prep for the next one. Right. So
what about you, Uncle John? Anybody identifies with you, what you're going through, the adventurers of their family? What's one advice?
One advice is just one
or just whatever. One? I mean, yeah, dude, okay. Whatever you want to share.
The more I learn about myself and my adventure state, it goes hand in hand with like finding out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's always been that for me,
mm-hmm.
finding out who I am. And it's portraying itself in my adventure side, whatever I get into, right? But at the end of the day, it's like the why. Why did I do this? Like, why is it born from me, right? At the end of the day, it's like it's like, you have to find your why, right? Like, why did you do this? Why did you do that? You have to question yourself, right? I think that's the basis of like self-improvement. If you didn't do that, then you did it for something else. Like, if you didn't do it to like to find out the why, then you did it for pleasure. You did it for to
or, do something fun. Or a reason fun. That you will never know.
Yeah, just to do something fun. But if you're me, there was something that called you there. There was something that called you. You can't explain it. And that's life. You have to act upon your what you feel. And you decide whether you want to pursue it or not. If you pursue it, be ready. Be ready to find something. You know? And if if you find something, bro, that could be treasure. And it's something for you and you alone. And maybe it'll be like what Nahum said, like you can capitalize on that maybe 20 years down the road. But it'll be yours. And at the end of the day, I think at 29 years old, I'm starting to realize, hey, this is life. Like, you're starting to find you find gems as you go through your journey. And you really, there's some things that you hold close to yourself. And you can only, you can only bear the fruit somewhere down the line, you know?
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Apologize. And beforehand, if we didn't do anything right, you know what I mean? But we're learning as we go. And hopefully you guys learned something from it, or anything that you guys were able to capture and learn from it or take in anything from it. But this was very, very... It was honestly, like, the personal level was better than I thought. You know what I mean? It was very informative, even us as, like, cousins. And so I want to thank you guys for giving me an opportunity, giving me a shot. Thank you for being here. I know it's 3 hours, but most likely I would split it into two, you know, one with you, one with John. But thank you so much, guys, for being here and giving me the opportunity. So, any last words?
Happy to be here, bro. Thank you so much. I'm excited about this, and can't wait to listen to the other episodes.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
My man. All right, wrap it up. Hey, so I want to thank everybody that stayed with us till the end. If you thought it was trash, hope you turned it off. But if it had value, please like, comment, subscribe, and share it out for me. Till the next one. Bye-bye.